Under a pale blue sky dotted with fluffy clouds, three bare peaks of rock form the backdrop to an arid plain of scrubland. In a dark hole underground, a man wielding a heavy pick pierces the wall of rock in front of him. The pick throws up sparks in the rock. Sometime later, the man sharpens the blade of the pickaxe with a file. Then he resumes his labor. He wears a round-domed felt hat and a long-sleeved collarless vest and long johns held up by braces as he cleaves at the rock. He peers closer at the fissure he's created, and light falls across his face to reveal a man in his 30s with a heavy black beard. He straightens and looks up towards the opening of the shaft. With his rifle slung across his shoulders, he jams on his hat and starts to clamber up the wooden footholds that lead from the bottom of the shaft to the bright light up at the top. With his legs drawn up in front of him, he sits huddled up against the wind, drinking from a mug, in the bleak light of early morning, next to a small campfire and his pitch tent. The year is 1898. In the shaft, working by the light of a lit taper, he chisels away. He spits on a piece of dislodged rock and wipes it clean with his thumb. Carefully, he slides a stick of dynamite into a crevice in the rock and wedges it with pieces of loose stone. He drops his digging tools into a bucket. Then jams a wooden board on top of a bucket attached to a rope hanging from a winch above and lights a fuse. He starts to clamber up the side of the shaft. Emerging at the top in bright sunlight, he climbs off the ladder onto one of two horizontal beams hammered across the top of the hole. He steps away from the mine and starts to pull on the rope that's slung over the higher of the two beams with the bucket attached to it at the bottom of the mine. The bucket carrying the tool starts to move upwards. The man's rifle slides from his back to his front, making him let go of the rope. Slipping the weapon off his shoulder, he tugs at the rope with both hands and the bucket resumes its journey upwards. The mouth of the mine is engulfed in thick yellow smoke. The miner, thrown back a little by the explosion, waits for the smoke to clear and steps back towards the shaft. He peers down into the hole and climbs down the makeshift ladder. One of the rungs snaps off and the miner plunges to the bottom of the shaft. Gasping with pain, he raises his head off the ground.
No!
Sometime later, hanging onto the rope with one hand, his broken left leg stretched out in front of him, he hauls himself up into a sitting position. He leans forward and stretches out his hand. Picking up a piece of loose rock, he spits on it and polishes it. He tucks it into his vest and gripping the rungs of the ladder with one arm and holding the rope with the other, he starts to haul himself up. On the stony, arid surface, he pulls himself along on his back, his left hand gripping each rock that he passes and propelling him forward a few inches at a time, towards the three bare hills on the horizon. At a silver and gold weighing station, rocks are ground into a powder and weighed. On the wooden floor next to the weighing table, the miner lies on his back, with his hands behind his head and his broken leg stretched out in front of him. An official document issued at Eagle, New Mexico, and headed Silver and Gold Scorification Assay, lists all the traces of precious metal found in the rock. The miner signs his name at the bottom, Daniel Plainview. In the desert, a workman in a cowboy hat, dungarees, and smoking a cigarette holds onto a rope at the top of a mineshaft under a rickety derrick. The year is 1902. Another workman sits near to two tethered horses. There are two men at the bottom of what is now a much bigger mine. One of them is loosening the mud at their feet. The other is shoveling it into a bucket that is attached to a rope. Both men wear scarves over their faces as they lean over the mud. One of them is Daniel Plainview. He straightens up and raises his face to the sky to take a breath of cleaner air. His fellow worker supports him with both hands. Up at the top under an open-sided tent, Plainview's colleague gently bounces a baby no more than a year old in his arms. He crosses to where Plainview is studying a photograph of a complex-looking derrick. The man points approvingly as Plainview begins to draw it on a blank page of an exercise book, with confident strokes of his pencil. The drawing of a vertical wooden beam supported at its base, with a diagonal beam across the top of it, bears a faint resemblance to a hangman's gallows. Sometime later in the hot, bleaching sun, Plainview wanders over to a similar-looking wooden construction and watches a rope hanging from a winch slowly descend into his mine. With both hands, he turns the handle of the winch. A digging pole rises up from the depths. A worker behind Plainview, pulling on the rope as a counterweight, trips. The rope runs free, unraveling wildly and plunging the heavy pole towards the bottom of the mine. It embeds itself in the mud at the bottom. Plainview inspects it from above and gives his co-worker a satisfied nod. The worker sucks in his teeth as black liquid starts to bubble up out of the mud. With a harness attached to his back and a scarf across his face, the man steps carefully down the ladder, leaning against the mineshaft wall that's lined with roughly nailed together planks. He inspects the oozing, bubbling pool of black oil at the bottom. Grabbing hold of the rope attached to the digger to balance himself, he steps deeper and deeper into the mine, towards the oil. Swinging onto the rope, he reaches down and plunges his arm into the black liquid. Plainview and another man up above watch and wait. Yanking the rope from side to side with both hands, the worker tries to free the digger from the sticky, heavy, oily mud. digging mast rises out of the mud, covered in a thick layer of shiny black grease. The man raises his eyes towards Plainview and two other workmen who are peering down from the lip of the shaft. Plainview excitedly smears his hand in the oil and raises it aloft in triumph. The worker with the baby sits the child down in a packing case and hurries over to Plainview and the rest of the crew tying off the pole. Bucket after bucket of shiny black oil is poured into a man-made crater a few feet away from the mine. The man with the baby approaches the edge of the crater and with one hand empties out a bucket of oil. He dips a finger into the oil and smears a tiny amount onto the baby's forehead. Then he kisses the child's soft, wispy hair just above his neck. Empty buckets glide back down to the base of the shaft, where the man standing knee-deep in oil submerges them in the black liquid, his face blackened, his hat and coat glistening. Daniel Plainview works alongside him, filling the buckets and sending them back up to the top. Four men up above pull on the ropes to haul up the buckets. A beam snaps and plunges down the shaft, crushing Plainview's co-worker in the chest. Plainview cowers as ropes and debris fall on his back. Slowly he turns to look at the dead man. Later up on the surface, his expression stern. Plainview stands over the baby in its box. The baby's face crumples. A short time later, Plainview pours some hooch into the baby's milk bottle and offers it to him. As the little boy rubs his eyes, Plainview, watching him intently, picks him up and bounces him gently on his lap. In a wood panel train, he sits nodding off with his arm around the baby. The child fiddles with Plainview's jacket and he stirs, looking at him intently, letting the boy's tiny fingers play with his bushy moustache. Years later, wearing a black three-piece suit with a fob watch, two pens clipped to his breast pocket, and a tan-colored hat, Plainview addresses an audience.
Ladies and gentlemen, I've traveled over half our state to be here tonight. I couldn't get away sooner because my new well was coming in at Coyote Hills, and I had to see about it. That well is now flowing at 2,000 barrels, and it's paying me an income of $5,000 a week. I have two others drilling, and I have 16 producing at Antelope, so... Ladies and gentlemen, if I say I'm an oil man, you will agree. Now, you have a great chance here. But bear in mind, you can lose it all if you're not careful. Out of all men that beg for a chance to drill your lots, maybe 1 in 20 will be oil men. The rest will be speculators. That's men trying to get between you and the oil men to get some of the money that ought by rights come to you. Even if you find one that has money and means to drill, he'll maybe know nothing about drilling. He'll have to hire the job out on contract, and then you're depending on a contractor who'll rush the job through so he can get another contract just as quick as he can. This is the way that this works.
What is your offer? We're wasting time.
Yes.
Please.
I do my own drilling. And the men that work for me, and they are men I know. I make it my business to be there and to see their work. I don't lose my tools in the hole and spend months fishing for them. I don't botch the cementing off and let water in the hole and ruin the whole lease. I'm a family man. I run a family business. This is my son and my partner, H.W. Plainview.
H.W. stands behind him.
We offer you the bond of family that very few oil men can understand. I'm fixed like no other company in this field, and that's because my Coyote Hills well has just come in. I have a string of tools already to put to work. I can load a rig onto trucks and have them here in a week. I have business connections, so I can get the lumber for the derrick. Such things go by friendship in a rush like this. And this is why I can guarantee to start drilling and to put up the cash to back my word. I assure you, ladies and gentlemen, no matter what the others promise to do, when it comes to the showdown, they won't be there.